An article from the San Jose Mercury this past week, a call for the General Accounting Office to look into the Livermore laser. And then the San Jose Mercury, the newspaper that represents Silicon Valley, and a lot of the Defense Department had an editorial cover-up at Livermore. Dissent at the lab for science and taxpayers' sake, should be encouraged. Dissent at the lab for the sake of taxpayers should be encouraged. And the article goes on, without presuming to know who's right or wrong, it is serious business when the former head of arms development at Lawrence Livermore Lab accuses two well-known Livermore physicists, and one of them is Edward Teller, who's also on the board of Western Goals, and Helionetic, a company that finally went under but stood to make a lot of money and made a huge amount when Star Wars plan was announced in 1983, and he was on the board. And this editorial said that other lab scientists have charged the management with distorting information on nuclear testing. An independent Livermore report was critical of another Star Wars program, the kinetic kill vehicles, and that has been suppressed since August, and Livermore's record makes us suspicious, the editorial said. The lab is suggesting that this is a free speech issue, and they declined to muzzle Teller and Wood about their opinions on the laser and the X-rated laser, but the cover-up is horrendous, and this editorial cites other problems with Livermore Lab. Then a large article, again, the San Jose Mercury, Teller misled the officials of Star Wars. Reports in the science journal Science and elsewhere said Teller met with Ronald Reagan, it was in 1984, not 86, and persuaded him to boost funding for X-ray laser research. He also was credited with helping inspire Reagan's 1983 decision to pursue the Star Wars concept. He also did it alone with Ronald Reagan. He gave Reagan a speech literally written by Edward Teller that took the Defense Department by surprise on the Star Wars, and this is the way the Joint Chief of Staff were taken by surprise that Ronald Reagan and Poindexter North were arming Iran and the others before him, Bud McFarland and the whole gang. We're in on sending the arms to Iran. So the secrets are from the Defense Department, where this secret team, this super sees me, I call them, this little pocket, have their own shenanigans using billions of dollars. And this article concluded, one of them in the San Jose Mercury, that Reagan's vision of a leak-proof shield that renders nuclear weapons impotent and obsolete is not a realizable vision. It was not a realizable vision, and the people who wanted the money were lying. And another article from the LA Times that Mr. Woodruff, who complained about these matters, went to the head of the University of California, and they told him to perfect or rewrite his complaint to them to make it look purposefully cumbersome and bureaucratic. This is a scientific matter of billions of dollars into Star Wars that won't work, and they know it. They told him to write it in a way so that it wouldn't sell on 60 Minutes. Make it cumbersome, technical, and so that it won't sell on 60 Minutes. It's something you're not supposed to understand. If you put it in plain terms, and Mr. Woodruff, Roy Woodruff, formerly of Lawrence Livermore Lab, spelled it all out with a press conference and said, this is what's happening. And he got this memo to present something so that it wouldn't sell, so that it would be highly technical and in matter, not for other people, lay people, to understand. And Edward Teller did say February this past year that Star Wars is imperfect but necessary, that it won't shield everything we need it for, but it's necessary. It's necessary for contracts. It's necessary for jobs. And that's what it's really necessary for. Now, Jack Anderson had an article just this morning in the Monterey Herald called Embarrassing the Boss. And this is very important because a former member of Congress has just written a book, an important book called The Arms Control Delusion, about the Star Wars and Defense Department. It's scheduled for release next week, co-authored by Senator Malcolm Wallet, a Republican from Wyoming, and Angela Cotevilla. The two were sponsoring an anti-missile defense program, and they claim that Ronald Reagan is way off and knows he's off on the Star Wars. And the interesting thing about this that Jack Anderson noticed is that conservatives breaking with their party's president are not unusual, but using words from his own secret documents to lambast him certainly is. Now, I was saying to somebody yesterday regarding the cost of living or expenses that researchers better start saving their money, because just as with Watergate or more so, when Ronald Reagan is out of office, there will be so many books on this man and this administration that the libraries could have one separate section, just as the cartoons of the time of Watergate. You could have the organized crime section, the Watergate section. This administration is going to be embarrassed this week with a book coming out, and one of the co-authors is from the Hoover Institute on the Stanford University campus. And they quoted Ronald Reagan, who said, "I've carefully evaluated the price that the U.S. must pay for keeping our Star Wars program within the bounds of current plans. I weighed these costs against our overall national security requirements." And what Wallop and Cotevia said is very, very important, and Jack Anderson quoted them from their book. They don't buy the assurances that the president is giving. They don't believe what he is saying. And they wrote that the president's words, in the quote, this is a quote, "are not those of a democratic leader who rules by convincing people to do the right thing, but of a bureaucrat who either does not care, he does not know what he's doing, or he does not care, or he is ashamed of the reason why he is doing these things, but who nevertheless wants the people to give him authority and money, and really resents being asked about specifics." Authority and money. That's the moonshot, that's the Iraq war, the Gulf confrontation, that's the Star Wars. These are the lies that we have been fed since World War II, when Robinson Jeffers said the first casualty is truth. That's what comes down, and he knew when they met at Tehran that they were already cooking up these disasters. Now, along with the Star War lies, there was a large article in the Miami Herald, reprinted in a lot of the newspapers, titled "A Probe in Washington. The United States used," and this is National Security Council and White House, "used the media to help the Contras. Propaganda was illegal." And this article goes into the Office of Public Diplomacy for Latin America and the State Department and the offices of Otto J. Reich. Do you like that name? R-E-I-C-H, the U.S. Ambassador of Venezuela, who was Chief of Public Diplomacy starting in June 1983 until January 86. And the General Accounting Office said that William Casey and these people were publishing material that was absolutely and patently false. Now, one of the things that IBC, that International Business Communications, was involved with Oliver North, with Carl Spitz Channel, was to defeat the congressman who voted against Star Wars, get them out of Congress so that they could have all their money and their billions and perpetuate the lie. This article is a full page article, or rather half a page, from Miami Herald, that the direction was run off by a memo March 13, 1985, by Patrick Buchanan, the White House communications director, called "Confidential Eyes Only," that outlined white propaganda operations. And this had to do with sending money to the Contras, that there were Soviet weapons in Nicaragua, and also defeat those pro-Soviets running for Congress, such as Congressman Barnes from Maryland, who they did defeat, to get out of Congress the people who did not love the Contras and who did not trust or believe Star Wars. And that's a big investigation that should keep going in Washington, the use of lies, white propaganda, to continue to get people elected until we have what they had in Germany in 1933 when Hitler was elected. And speaking of Star Wars, as the economy dropped and the stock market went crazy and the president gave his flim-flam speech last week, this press conference that was so horrendous, and maybe I'll do more about that with you next week, on where he got off the track. He was asked a question, and he went completely off the track and began to lose his mind. I don't know how many of you picked that up. He wants Mr. Gorbachev to come to his little house, that four-bedroom house up on the top of the mountain in Santa Barbara, the Eagle's Nest. It's identical to Hitler's Eagle's Nest. And, of course, it was obvious to the head of the Soviet Union after that speech that not only is the economy bankrupt, but the president is totally insane. And he said the summit is over, it's down by Star Wars. Star Wars is a first strike. The Soviet Union knows it. And Ronald Reagan is only using Mr. Gorbachev to leave the White House with the aura of wanting a peace summit. And he refuses to be used. Mr. Gorbachev will not be used. And that's great for him. Another lie, a horrendous lie that I mentioned briefly last week, was the fact that Kurt Waldheim, it turned out, was his war record was part of the OSS-CIA record, that they knew of his war crimes, and that he had worked for the OSS starting in April, just at the time of the Tehran conference, when Robinson Jeffers says they were cooking up their little lies. He was writing a poem just at the time these people were indeed cooking up their lies, and they were hiring the great Kurt Waldheim to work for the United States, and he became part of the American intelligence operation. Well, a new book is coming out that was in the newspaper this week, a book referring to Waldheim as his whole life being a lie. The front page of the San Francisco Chronicle says, memoir by ex-UN aide. Book calls Waldheim a lie. Waldheim, the person, is a total lie. And the article says, Kurt Waldheim was a living lie, an ambitious mediocrity who caused great damage to the United Nations by covering up his wartime record. Sir Brian Urquhart, a Briton who retired last year from the UN as Undersecretary General, said that although Waldheim performed better than he was expected to during the 10 years as UN chief, better than he was expected to, even showing courage on occasion, he lacked the qualities of vision, integrity, inspiration, leadership that the UN needed. By covering up his service as a staff officer with the German army, group in the Balkans, he has done immense damage not only to his country but to the United Nations. The book is called A Life in Peace and War, published by Harper and Row. Waldheim is now, of course, president of Austria. The fact that Waldheim was never tried, Urquhart said, would seem rather to militate against a finding that the former Secretary General was a war criminal. It seems to me the important thing is that everyone was under a total misapprehension about what his war record was. I think that a bogus history of his personnel history is a total disqualification for a responsible office. Urquhart, an intelligence officer with British Airborne Forces during the war, explained his personal grievances against Waldheim. I spent a great deal of my time defending him with various people against allegations about his wartime activities. I did it on what it turned out to be a completely fictitious basis of the record he gave me. After all, if someone at the UN is caught falsifying his job application, he is summarily dismissed. The new book coming out about Reagan's lies with Star Wars will be out this next week, and Harper and Row is publishing a book, A Life in Peace and War, about the lies of Waldheim. This past October, there were more pieces of information about Waldheim, this one from the Houston Post, October 18th. New evidence of crimes of Waldheim reported. The file on the Nazi roll is locked up in the United Nations office. A locked-up file called Kurt Waldheim, Murder and Other War Crimes, contains documents, pictures, photographs, irrefutably placing him as a key Nazi intelligence officer. This is a published report that just came out Saturday in October. The file, locked at the United Nations building, contains 185 documents, witness statements, photographs, captured Nazi documents, placing Waldheim as a key intelligence officer of Group E of the Wehrmacht High Command for Southeast. The unit, based in Salonika, Greece, was in charge of security of the Balkans from 1943 to 45. It was documented by the 1947 War Crimes Commission as being responsible for atrocities against Yugoslav partisans, deporting 40,000 Greek Jews to their death camps, the abuse of Americans and Allied prisoners. Prosecutors at the Nuremberg Crimes Trial said the Nazi euphemism special tasks that Waldheim was in charge of was used for unwritten orders of torture and then execution. On August 1943, the memo from Waldheim and his immediate superior, Lieutenant Colonel Herbert Warnsdorf, recommend the execution of Yugoslav partisans captured from three villages. The memo appeared to be in reaction to a January 16, 1943 meeting with Adolf Eichmann that brought together the Nazis for the final solution. And keep in mind that Adolf Eichmann's superior, the head of the Romanian Iron Guard, in the early 50s was being brought to the United States, first to New Jersey to work for Elmer Bobst, the head of the pharmaceutical, the Warner Lambert. Elmer Bobst, the godfather of Richard Nixon's career. He worked for Cabot Cole. Henry Cabot Lodge ran as vice president with Nixon and lost to John Kennedy in 1960. And Nixon wanted that election, lost to John Kennedy in 1960. And then he came to California to head that Transcomputer International that became International Imaging that was bought by Albert Hakim and General Secord that became Stanford Technology Training Group. So while the Eichmann, Adolf Eichmann, was soon to be hung in Israel, and this Waldheim was to become head of the United Nations, a partner in this group, von Bolschwing was in California, where he lived until 1981, died in 1982. This Houston Post said that the United Nations controlled archives also contain at least several names of government and industry leaders today who are in the West who have denied their secret past, but it's locked up in the archives. The debate continues in the United Nations whether to release this information. Why is this information important now? I've talked many times about the two largest robberies in the world that took place after the war, not the robbery, but the taking of money from Germany, all money from the banks in Germany and put in Switzerland and then disseminated and began to be dispersed in the 1950s with Otto Skorzeny out of the banks of Madrid and Switzerland. And the Third Reich emptied out all their money and said, if you want to fight Russia, if you want to fight them, you have to do the arming. And Germany did not put money into that. These projects are the projects that have bankrupted the United States. Japan took all of their money out of their country, and the top Japanese persons under the emperor, persons never tried for war crimes, took all of their money and invested it, gold and cash and whatever, the loot from all over the area that they took and conquered, and put it away for the future. And our banks have been emptied of our cash, our liquidity, so that we have to rely on Taiwan, that was formed by the late Chiang Kai-shek, and Japan, that worked closely with Chiang after the war. Foreign countries are paying our loan, and we have literally been cleaned out. And these things were planned, carefully planned, and described in many books, and the economy can go backwards very quickly because of the arrangement of these people. It'd be nice to know if some of those several names in government and industry have any fingers in some of the market jumping that you're going to see take place in the next 3 or 4 years, if not this year. And then finally, Ronald Reagan, who never gets tired of dirty little tricks, and Thomas Buchanan, his buddy, who never gets tired of dirty little tricks, they made a cute one this past August 19th, just several weeks ago. He's appointed Henry Anatole Grunewald, a Jew, to be the new ambassador to Austria. The first Jew appointed by Reagan lasted about 3 months, came home with what was supposed to be a heart condition and died of a cancer. I was suspicious of that. That was Mr. Cummings, a long supporter of Ronald Reagan. He honored him, Theodore Cummings, with being ambassador to Vienna. Then, of course, it went to Helene von Damm, the secretary for Otto von Bolschwing, Eichmann's superior, translator, helped put money into that corporation in California, worked for Reagan, appointed people around him for 8 years, appointed them around him for 2 years, became ambassador to Vienna. She lives in Vienna, and she's now married to one of the wealthiest men in Vienna. So for a short time, we had Ronald Lauder as ambassador to Vienna. He's coming home, and Reagan has put Henry Grunewald, described in the New York Times, Mr. Grunewald, who resigned Monday as editor-in-chief of Time magazine, is a Jewish native of Vienna who fled the Nazis in 1940, a fact that as recently as 1985 would have drawn only a polite mention as a future ambassador to Austria. But now the situation has come up, the New York Times said, where he has to either shake the hands of Kurt Waldheim, the prime minister of Austria, and that will be quite a confrontation. The article says the prospect of a Jew's presenting his diplomatic credentials to President Waldheim for official accreditation as the United States ambassador to the government of Austria unsettled Mr. Grunewald enough to cause him to consult not only with his old friends but several American Jewish spokesmen. He wrestled with it, Mr. Grunewald said, for advice from former ambassador Saul Linowitz. A senior administration official said that Mr. Grunewald, 64 years old, had conversations with a variety of Jewish leaders before he decided to go forward, and he was concerned about the Jews opposing his selection as ambassador to Austria. But again, I think that the team in the White House, the Buchanans and the Fritz Kramers and so forth, are just laughing their heads off to send a Jew to Austria. At the same time, a book is coming out about Kurt Waldheim by the person representing and under him at the United Nations. And the information coming out that Waldheim's whole lie was a lie, and he sent 30 or 40,000 Jews to their death, and this is our new ambassador to Austria. One point about the New York Times that is very subtle and interesting, this article is August 19, 1987, by David Binder. The Jewish spokesman consulted by Mr. Grunewald apparently see that he should, I guess, go ahead and represent him that he's dealing with the president as a friendly country and not what he did in the past. And they quote Abraham H. Foxman, national director of the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. He said, I'm proud of this appointment, proud that the United States decided with Waldheim as president of Austria to send a Jewish ambassador, a Jewish refugee, as an ambassador. I hope they will receive him as an American and not a Jew. Well, those long listeners to World Watchers might remember about 2 years ago, I had on the program that Abraham Foxman, this gentleman who's so proud of the appointment and head of the ADL, took a trip to Switzerland with Fritz Kramer and a gentleman from the Associated Press, Howell Buell, at a time when money from Klaus Barbie was to be deposited in the bank account of Joseph Mengele. Just to backtrack for you new listeners, there were allegations, that, and I was told by persons who used an airplane to go South America, that the pilot on that plane, Mr. Hetrick, had been arrested for bringing in cocaine from Klaus Barbie. That was the cocaine that John DeLorean had in the hotel room. Barbie took the money for that cocaine and gave it to Hal Buell, vice president of Associated Press, and he went to Switzerland and met the attorney for Joseph Mengele, who was indeed very much alive, and put that money into the Nazi account of Joseph Mengele. And Abraham Foxman duplicated that trip. As a matter of fact, it was when I put this on the air that this friend of mine who had given me this information and who works in the State Department said that they were absolutely furious that I had this on World Watches and said, referred to me as the Jewish bitch out there, is caught on to what we're doing. Those were the words I got a call from friends who had given me the information in the first place and said, guess what? We know what you're doing because they're complaining back there in a certain office that you have mentioned this on the air. So the same Foxman is saying, isn't this great to send this Jew to see Waldheim at a time like this? You have to ask, whose side are they on? Now, another lie that's come about and isn't hushed up yet and hasn't had a solution has to do with the condition of Mr. William Sessions, nominated to be the new FBI director. And I do and would like to spend another whole hour on the links of William Webster and William Sessions to the murder of John Kennedy and the Martin Luther King assassination done by the same people and groups. The New York Times had an article, and it was reprinted in some of our papers. Sessions' ailment is called a mystery. And in an intestinal examination of the newly confirmed director of FBI, William Sessions, was made today. They found nothing at all suspicious, but the tests say that the recent intestinal bleeding remains a mystery, that he doesn't have the ulcers they said he did. He's been hospitalized twice, first in Washington, then in San Antonio. The bleeding of the intestinal tract is a mystery. There are a variety of causes, but it isn't the ulcers they said that he had. They said the cause is quite unclear, but they don't know what it is, and you shouldn't be suspicious. They use the word suspicious in the New York Times. Philip Shannon wrote, he's already had 2 pints of blood. He was admitted to Washington Hospital for treatment of bleeding ulcer, but that isn't what it is. There's no plans right now to give him any more blood, but it would take at least a month for him to recover. and it is a mystery on why his stomach is bleeding. And then for a article, my concluding article for this evening is titled, The CIA Chief Favors a Long-Term Service. And this article, if you can have a one-upsmanship, is the chutzpah of the week. CIA Director William Webster, this is from the Washington Times, October the 9th, has told reporters that he thinks the director of the CIA should be on a long-term basis, just like the 10-year term at the FBI. He was there 10 years and then was out. He doesn't think the CIA director should be changed when the new administration comes in. If the Democrats are in 1988, he thinks he should stay 10 years. And boy, can I believe he should, with all of the CIA involvement in the Iran-Contra and with Oliver Buck Rebel of the FBI working with Ollie North and the National Security Council and the FBI working with the Iran-Contra group going against the Boland Amendment. He says that the CIA directorship shouldn't change every time a new president is elected. To tie it to the electoral process is troublesome to me. You can better believe it's troublesome to him because new investigations might open up, like the Iran-Contra just scratched the surface. And remember, after the Watergate story, when Jimmy Carter came in after Nixon and Ford and that Watergate team, he had Stansfield Turner appointed to the CIA, and he cleaned out about 200 people that became the nucleus of the Iran-Contra secret team. Theodore Shackley, Thomas Klein, Chichi Quintero, all those rotten people were cleaned out when Jimmy Carter came in, were brought in by Ronald Reagan, and now William Webster wants to continue for 10 years and cover up the Reagan-Iran-Contra for 10 years. This is a horrendous story that defies description, so I'll just leave it at that. And also, as CIA director, he rehired one of the Iran-Contra people whose name is Jose Fernandez. He also uses the name Thomas Castillo, the CIA man in Costa Rica. He rehired them now. He's given a job in the headquarters instead of dropping him for his CIA work in Costa Rica. Against the Boland Amendment, William Webster has hired him, kept him on at the CIA, and he wants to stay on to cover up for years to come. This is something we must push and not allow to happen, that the director changes with the administration, and particularly with this very rotten administration. Now, I'll take a one-minute break and just play a little bit more of that new song, A Cut from Sting. I like it very much. They danced alone. I'll play a section of that. And then 375-3082, you can get to the telephone, and I'll be back with you, and we'll take some questions, and you'll have a chance to tell me what you're thinking about.
Dancing with the dead. Dancing.